You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 18th of November 2016 on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to Midori House, coming to you live from Studio One here in London. I'm Tyler Brulé. On today's show, we'll be looking at where the Monocle team have been finding the best stories of the week with contributions from our editorial team here in London. And we'll also, of course, be looking at how the outgoing US president is dealing with the new president-elect.
My hope is that the president-elect coming in takes a similarly constructive approach.
We'll hear about some of the high achievers at Monocle's Travel Top 50 event, which took place here at Midori House last night.
We have to provide them with a sense of giving them this kind of authentic discovery of the surrounding of the city, of the beaten track.
And we'll also be looking forward to tonight's edition of The Menu, which visits the World Cheese Awards in San Sebastian.
Sometimes I feel like a little dog that has to have a really good nose, and you just gotta ask questions and you gotta keep sniffing around till you find the things that you really like.
Well, there you go. That's all to come on Midori House with me, Tyler Brulé. Well, good evening from Studio One here at Midori House. Just gone 1801, coming up to 1802 here in a very chilly London. Steve, you're all bundled up.
I am. It's knitwear season now.
It is. I've been noticing the loop wheeler is out. You know it's cold when the loop wheeler's out.
Of course. The nights are drawing in, Tyler.
They are. Well, not this one, because it's going to run and run and run. Isn't it, Andrew Tuck, at the far end of the table?
Well, just I must say that someone got a cattle prod to get me down here because it's rather busy upstairs.
You're ignoring me, thought of Steve. I was trying to invite him to the program all day. Our producer beyond the glass, Tom Hall, said, "Well, Andrew can't come to the show."
I was playing hard to get.
I knew you were. So anyway, three requests, we know it works, and finally, you're here. We're going to be talking a little bit later about a nice trip that we had, a surprise trip to a very balmy part of Europe in a moment. But we should say hello to Henry Sheridan. Hello.
Hello, Tyler.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good. What have you been up to today?
Today, I've been getting back into the swing of things here at Midori House. The last 2 days, I've been in Cannes at MAPIC, Europe's Retail Property Trade Fair. So I've been recovering from that. And it was an interesting time.
Is that where you learnt to wear your jumper, like the European way?
And it's very jaunty and French.
Yeah, he's got it kind of draped over the shoulder.
I noticed that Steve and Andrew were already making faces at the way I'm wearing my jumper as Tyler was reading out the top of the show.
I don't think there's anything wrong. Were you on a yacht or two? Or something? Is that where you were like, oh, chilly evenings?
Or were you watching
evenings?
People on a yacht?
I have been. I certainly wasn't on a yacht. I may have been watching from some balconies.
Me and Tyler have been talking about doing a story which is about the looks of people at some of these events, because they're very distinct. And I imagine that MAPIC has a look, and I wonder if you've adopted it.
I've actually been rocking this style since my late teens. I find it very versatile.
Well, no, clearly not in these studios or in this office building, because we've never seen it before, have we?
No, this is new to me.
I think it's quite a good way. I've revived it to cope with the fluctuations in climate in Midori House. As you know,
this is true.
There's huge variation between studios and outside of it.
And floor to floor, even.
Indeed.
I'm going to put you on the spot, because I thought Andrew was going to. If you could sum up, just give us a MAPIC sort of head to toe, man or woman. What are they wearing? People in the world of course, shopping center, retail development. What's the look?
It's men in suits. There's no other way of putting it. And actually, the few people who I saw speak and spoke to there who weren't men in suits observed the fact that they were surrounded by men in suits in the industry. Mary Portis said that the event should be a little less suity, should try to be a little less suity. And it is a fairly conservative industry, sartorially speaking. I have to say.
Andrew, we were also in the southern part of Europe. We're a little bit further west, of course, in the south of France. We scampered off to Lisbon.
We went to Lisboa for dinner. We managed to leave here about kind of like 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
First thing, very productive. I think, you know, we've always sort of talked about the close relationship between the UK and Portugal, but it's the one place that you can fly to south that's in the same time zone. So yeah, we were here till sort of about 1:30. We thought that we were going to miss the flight. We had like time for a nice salmon lunch at the airport.
Yeah, and on the way, as we arrived in Lisbon, the other amazing thing about arriving at that airport, we got to the customs, nobody there, no one at passport control, we whizzed out of the airport.
No one.
Yeah, but it was so quiet.
Oh, sorry, I read that the wrong way as being like there was no passport control.
No. It was so easy. And on the return journey, we managed to do it from hotel to gate in 30 minutes.
Yeah, it was very good.
It's impressive.
And we went to visit Steve, one of the gentlemen we were wrangling in the current issue, actually. We went down to meet with someone who runs a very interesting energy company.
Indeed, Antonio Mexia. Mexia? Am I pronouncing that right?
Antonio.
Antonio. yes, who runs EDP, which is Energie de Portugal, which is not just Portugal's, you know, national energy provider. But what the thing that was really fascinating about them, and you can read all about this in the December-January issue of Monocle magazine, is the work they're doing on renewable energy and the vision that he's got for where he thinks that's going to take Portugal. And it was the really fascinating thing about the interview is that it was so optimistic, and so much talk around energy right now is, on the whole, it's either pessimistic or it feels like it's stuff that's in 30 years time, when, you know, Elon Musk is talking about, you know, solar roof tiles or so on. This is achievable, optimistic, let's do this, we can have a better world, which you don't hear that often.
Well, what Andrew and I, we found that the real story is he's got a vision for fine furniture.
An unbelievable headquarters, which again, as Steve said, is a statement about his belief that you need to be ambitious about your company and what Portugal means. But he's partnered with people from all around the world, from the Lusophone world, the likes of Marcia Kogan, who have come in to be the curators and the advisors on the interiors. But he's gone to the north, he's gone to Denmark.
I think half the trees in Germany were chopped down, taken across the border to Denmark, turned into nice planks, and then made their way down to Lisbon. I said the one that we walked away from, and it's a little bit of my column in the FT this weekend. You can build an amazing headquarters and you can walk away with great impressions, but I still have that wonderful scent in my nose of just great hardwood planks, wonderfully treated. We walked through the building and said that's actually the branding element of it.
And the other great thing is, yes, he has an office which is spectacular. And what was nice about it was just piled with wonderful books and magazines. There was a real sense of it being a great hub. But actually, the staff canteen was also just really impeccable. And all the meeting rooms done by Barbara Oscarby as well, just really impeccable taste and ambition and a sense that, you know, you could draw people into your world and this would be a really magical place to work.
Steve, he did such a good job on Andrew and selling Brand Portugal that I think it was, you know, we had a couple of, a very nice wine from Alentejo as well.
Okay.
Which has a whole wonderful story about, of course, the condensation and that it's incredibly salty, and I bought into the whole thing like four bottles later as well. Andrew, of course, sharing those bottles, and as we were driving back, Andrew goes looking around sort of, you know, the streets of Lisbon, because Andrew likes Palma a lot. He's going, maybe I could do a second home in Lisbon.
Yes. Can I tell you the other extraordinary thing, which whatever you think about the world and how it should be run, the interesting thing in Lisbon is, you know, Antonio wanted a cigarette, and maybe I was tempted to have one, but anyway, Antonio wanted a cigarette. So we're at the restaurant table, so he just asks for the ashtray to be brought to the table, and he smokes in the restaurant his cigarette, and there's no huffing and puffing from the other tables because everyone's joined right in. And the restaurant is split into two floors. There's a floor for smokers and a floor for non-smokers. But on the smoking floor, there was also just an amazing bar of all nicely kind of like leathered and worn in, but kind of people of
that's
every
the furniture,
age.
Furniture, not the guests.
Yeah, but everyone was just packed in smoking. It was back in time 20 years. And yes, you know, we don't want to go to an age where you come home all the time smelling cigarette smoke. But there was something very liberating and incredible about no one cared. It wasn't a grumpy atmosphere.
On a similar note, when we went to Lisbon, a year and a half ago for the Quality of Life conference, there was a moment at the end on the final Sunday when all the guests had gone off, where most of us found ourselves in one of the parks, sat in very nice chairs by a kiosk, with that little kiosk where they sold very nice white wine for €1.50 a glass. And there was something incredibly civilized about this, which you wouldn't have, for example, here in London, not only because our weather is terrible, but also because the idea of, serving alcohol in a park would be somewhat frowned upon, as if there are rules and you shouldn't do that. And Lisbon had that.
We went by, in fact, on the way to dinner past said little park. And we pointed out, we said, there's a nice kiosk. We were with Sophie and her baby. And when we said farewell to all of the guests. And we're going to have to say farewell to you as well, because
I've got to go and do some pages.
You have a magazine.
And you're
going
to be talking about more serious things now.
Of course.
Can I just say that this studio has four sets of headphones. I think these are the most comfortable ones. They're slightly different to yours.
Ones at the very end.
Yeah, thanks for that. See you later. That was Andrew Tuck, our editor, off to see some more pages off as well as we complete our forecast. Steve, it's been a very it's been this interesting week. It's always an interesting news week, but watching everything in a post-Trump world with a little bit of hindsight, much licking of wounds. Of course, a president I think was very happy to get on Air Force One this week, and maybe just be outside of the U.S. As well. I found it sort of fascinating that we have all of these people who are gathered around as commentators on so many TV networks are still around. So you think that we resume normal news programming, but not at all.
No.
So in fact, a lot of these shows, the State of the Race has now become called State of America. So same fanfare music, new logo. And we're still sort of living in this world where everything is going to be analyzed and analyzed. First question, do you think that this, does it find some conclusion point by January 1st? Is it or January 21st?
Possibly, yes. And I think this is a very, very different transition period than what you would normally expect post-election. And also, us here at Monocle 24 are not alone in continuing the coverage. While you were, you and Andrew were in Lisbon on Tuesday night, we were hosting here just over 100 guests for a recording of the Foreign Desk with four fantastic panellists looking at the impact of Donald Trump on the rest of the world. You can hear that on Saturday at 12 noon London time. But I think, what's interesting is, this story doesn't stop, because now it becomes, who is he going to appoint to his cabinet? Who is going to be his advisors? Who are going to be his advisors? What sort is he going to carry on governing? Is he going to govern in the way that he campaigned? And so far, it seems like, yes, he is tweeting about, stories today about how he had stopped Ford from moving a plant to Mexico. And then a few months later, Ford say, that's not quite true. But it doesn't matter, because his supporters now think it's true. And the president-elect has said this. And there are a lot of worrying signs coming out of Washington or out of Trump Tower. From the people that he's appointed to the statements that he said, how we adjust this in the coming weeks, I don't know. We can't have this same level of focus on one story, because everyone's going to go mad. But it's huge.
And it's kept a lot of graphic designers in newsrooms, whether they look after websites, whole pages of papers, where they've created Trump sections already in the last week, because there are five or six themes that you have to be covering at any one time. So do you think that this dies down and morphs into something in late January, or this is still so extraordinary that we're going to be living with this a year from now?
It's important not to take, I think, your eye off the ball. I mean, this campaign was so personality focused, and indeed, you know, Trump's outsized personality facilitated that inclination in the media. And I think when it comes to analysing the transition, there's already been, or at least that focus on individual personalities has been maintained. A lot has been made of the personal meetings between Trump and Obama, between Obama and Merkel, between Trump and various other political figures in the US. But it's important to remember that, you know, these administrations, the Obama and Trump administrations, which are going to be transitioning between each other, are more than one person, they're whole staffs. And, you know, when it comes to how smooth it's going to be, I've been done a little digging around in the archives of the New York Times. And this is a story from June the 12th, 2002, so about a year after the transition between George W. Bush and Clinton. White House vandalized in transition, GAO fines. I'll read the first paragraph. The General Accounting Office, an investigative arm of Congress, said today that damage, theft, vandalism and pranks did occur in the White House complex in the presidential transition from Bill Clinton to George W. Bush. The agency put the cost at $13,000 to $14,000 US dollars, including $4,850 to replace computer keyboards, many with damaged or missing W keys, which is a lovely touch there, I think, from the outgoing Clinton staff.
Anything about spray paint removal in hallways or anything like that?
Apparently glue was smeared on desk drawers. It's quite immature.
Oh, it's so
that's
immature.
Schoolboy stuff, isn't it?
Surprising, Steve?
Yeah, it's funny. I remember that and thought
could do better.
No, I remember thinking that I thought that was an urban myth, the sort of the removing the W's from the keyboards. But obviously not if there's an official report saying it happened. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I think people are too worried about what a Trump presidency means to be like. It's not like he's just a political rival and I don't like him and his politics. This is, you know, a lot of Obama staffers will think this is the beginning of the apocalypse. Although apparently Obama did bring all his staff together to say specifically, this is not the apocalypse. Those were apparently his first words to all staff.
Officially?
Yeah, apparently. Don't worry, guys, this is not the apocalypse.
And it's interesting because I think we had the meet and greet between Obama and Trump and I guess, of course, a similar message delivered that, you know, there's the language, of course, of campaigning, but there's going to be a cooler tone, et cetera. So we've lived with that. But then I sort of felt he sort of ratcheted up a little bit more in Berlin again.
He did, indeed. I think he made... So the trip to Berlin was important in a couple of ways. One, he was essentially there to, you know, to pass over the beacon of liberalism and world leadership to Angela Merkel and say, sorry, Angela, you're on your own now. Justin Trudeau might be here to help a little bit, but he is only Canada. Apologies.
Sorry.
And so there was that was important. But he was also saying, you know, look, NATO is incredibly important and the NATO alliance has to stay and has to be supported. And he was also talking about the importance linked to that of the new president standing up to Russia. And those points needed to be made. And, you know, we'll see how much that's listened to back in Washington.
And do you think it was fair, or at least a fair assessment, a fair call on Obama's part to really almost pass the baton to Angela and say that you are now the new defender of the faith?
I think that it was an accurate analysis of the situation in the world at large, insofar as I think she is the next in line symbolically in that regard. You know, I can't think of anything else that he might have done. That doesn't mean that I hold out much hope for Angela's chances. Well, I mean, I don't know what her mission is now. Reinvigorating the world order that she, Obama, and previous cosmopolitan world leaders belong to, that seems to be in a state of profound crisis. I'm not sure if she has the political support at home or abroad to be able to reinvigorate that. I think it's going to be steering a ship through very, very troubled waters indeed.
Just before we go to a break, Steve, on that, if you were one of Merkel's political advisors, would you be sharpening the Faber-Castell right now and thinking, this is a huge chance for us. I've been, or my leader, she's been ordained by an outgoing president who seems to be even more well-loved than he was 3 months ago. Do I seize this political opportunity now, of course, knowing that we have an election a year upon us in Germany?
I think she might be slightly worried that Barack Obama's recent notes of support have not necessarily helped, whether that's Hillary Clinton, those campaigning for Britain to remain in the European Union. And, you know, maybe German voters won't care one way or another which way Obama's voting. She needs to concentrate right now on re-election because, and essentially, you know, global leadership can wait for, I think, for 7-8 months. She needs to focus on re-election. She needs to get re-elected. And then she can play that role in a proper way. The worst thing in the world would be if German voters, or too many German voters, see her as concentrating too much on things outside of Germany. The world is in too dangerous a spot. I know it sounds slightly odd saying the world's too dangerous for her to be concentrating on the world, but if she blows this and Germany, of all countries, becomes unstable, then this is a bad note to end on, isn't it? Then I don't really know what happens next. Weekend. Should we go to a break, Tyler?
we might do that. No, as you're saying, it would be a very unhappy place, not just for the EU, but the greater world. Steve, I don't know if you've noticed, but Josh Fennert came into the studio.
I did.
He's here, which is a cue for a break. Steve Bloomfield, our executive and forward editor. Henry Sheridan, very good to see you. Gentlemen, have a very good weekend. You're listening to Midori House, 1820 here in London, going for a short break. We'll be back after this.
Monocle invites you to raise a glass of Glühwein at the annual Monocle Christmas Market. Please join us for this winter wonderland of a weekend, complete with warming treats from the Monocle Cafe, reindeer petting, and an appearance from Monochan the Owl, all set to a cheery playlist. You can also try your hand at our ever-popular tombola and meet our VIP Santa Claus all the way from Rovaniemi. The 2016 Monocle Christmas Market on Saturday the 3rd and Sunday the 4th of December from 11 a.m. to 1700 at our Midori House HQ here in Marylebone. Find all the details at monocle.com. We ho ho, hope to see you there.
And welcome back to Midori House here on Monocle 24. With me, Tyler Brulé. As I mentioned, Josh Fennert is in the studio. Rob Bound is also in the studio, and also Marcus Hippie. I wanted to go straight over to you, Josh, but Rob just announced that he's out of juice. Where to go?
It's a sad position to be in, isn't it? What is it? It's an indictment of something, isn't it?
Many things.
I might have a glass of wine. I'm sure you could.
Yeah, I think you
we
do
need
that.
A bit of sound effects.
While we do that, I'm going to go over to Josh. As we said at the top of the show, we had our Travel Top 50 Awards last. It was the first time that it was done as a live event. We had people who flew in from all over the world to accept their prizes, and it was, what a jolly evening it was.
Well, incredible. I think we served the travel industry in many senses. We definitely spurred on a few people to get a few London hotels and to take the flight to come over here to enjoy it with us. Quite an interesting crowd, quite a perky crowd. Having been to Steve's event on Tuesday, the Foreign Desk Live, there was a palpably different feeling.
How is it different?
I think our guys were better looking, actually.
Really?
No, not really. but there was a very positive feeling about it. So for the uninitiated, the Travel Top 50 Awards are now in their 8th year, where we profile 50 places that we think elevate the experience of travel, and some quirkier than others,
of course new issue is just out on newsstand. We don't want to give too much away, because of course we'd love people to go and purchase the issue as well, but three highlights, not even just from last night, if you had to just give sort of three little tips out of those top 50, what are sort of the outstanding awards?
Well, you and I were talking a little bit earlier, so this relates to one of the awards, but I can't actually say what the award is, because it's
cryptic corner, Rob.
It's a private moment.
Maybe a little bit of industry gossip.
I can't say what the award is, because I can't remember her name.
But she was a prize. One of the hotels which we've given an award to in our list was accepted on behalf of a London-based colleague for this large hotel brand. And he dispensed a little bit of industry insight by saying that in the hotel industry, in this rather grand London hotel, there are increasingly problems with staffing post-Brexit. Mm. So finding people to be servers in in the restaurant, finding people to be part of the front of house staff, which I think is an interesting and slightly damning indictment on the decision made for the UK to leave Europe, and for lots of workers to leave as well.
What would be if we had to run a
Don't
hotel?
Don't say that's why you're out of juice, because someone had to go back to Romania. Krakow.
If this was a hotel instead of a radio station and magazine and design agency, okay, this building, Midori House, what would, Tyler, what would be your job?
Oh,
in a hotel.
If this, I would be, that's good. I think I would be,
concierge.
I think it'd be a decent concierge. I think I'd like to be running the grand dining room.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Maitre d'?
Yeah, I don't want to do breakfast, though.
No, okay. No,
I'm only on duty from 6:30 onwards.
Like Joan Collins.
But I would like to dine, and dine with, of course, a nice adjoining bar. I'd like to sort of, Rob, sort of, you'd be sort of on dessert. I'd say, Mr. Bound, have a lovely table for you over in the bar right now, sort of, all warmed up for you. I think that's what I'd like to do.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see the candlelight flickering in your eyes.
What job would you like in the hotel?
What would I like? I don't know. See, the maitre d' is a good one, isn't it? You get to be a little bit emollient. Yeah. You get good hours, and you get to enjoy a bit of the vibe that your customers enjoy as well. I don't know. I wouldn't want to be in charge of the chambermaids.
No.
Would you, Josh?
Perhaps.
I think Josh would be. You'd like to run the creche, wouldn't you?
Why would I be running the creche? I thought you'd have me as busboy.
No, because I've noticed during the Christmas market that that kids sort of just flock to you.
Good with kids,
don't they? Just so Marcus. I'm in charge of the.
I think I would be the visiting Santa Claus, probably.
Yes,
of course he would be.
Of course.
Okay. Once a year? I think it means you turn up for work once a year.
That's the common misperception. Sort of, everyone always thinks that when it's the beginning of December, when it's Monaco Christmas market time, it's me dressing up as Santa, but that is not the case.
No.
I think we need to look into his mileage program.
Just before we go, one other tip. If you had to go to one property, one of the hotels that got an award, where would you go?
I think the Schloss Elmau. I've yet to visit.
I loved that they showed up last night.
And so grateful. It was absolutely wonderful.
And delightful daughter as well, studying at LSE.
Okay.
But just had to say.
I think they are.
She wants to work in the culture department.
They're worth a look next year, I think.
They are. Someone is. One family member, anyway.
Relax.
I think it's an amazing story about Schloss Elmau, by the way, that they hosted G7 summit just last year. And they had to turn down the offer quite a few times because they didn't really realize what kind of an event it would be, because that wasn't told to them explicitly in the beginning on the phone.
We thought it was a string quartet.
No, the foreign minister kept on saying, we want to do an event, but we can't quite tell you what it is.
Really?
And then the Black Hawk choppers came in, and I think they knew exactly what was going to happen.
Buble.
Yeah. Marcus, we'll keep it on an entertaining note. Tell us what's coming up on your program in, 34 minutes?
34 minutes. Liam Aldous, our Madrid correspondent, got the greatest gig ever. He's been spending a few days in San Sebastian checking out what's happening at the World Cheese Awards. 3,061 different cheeses over there represented.
Name them, Rob.
Good numerical knowledge there from
him. And I think it was 261 judges over there, cheese experts, choosing their favourites. And we can reveal what the winning cheese is. I'm not going to reveal it quite yet. And we're also going to talk about the situation with front of house staff. It's interesting what Josh mentioned just a few minutes ago about how it's hard to find good staff and there's competition over great talent.
Don't diss the Monocle front of house staff because they are listening.
In the UK, there's been a project last month that quite a few restaurants exchanged their staff members and tried to basically offer them an opportunity to learn something from competitors. And they said to me that one of the concerns was that they were worried that their staff members would get stolen to other places, but that didn't happen. But anyway, they're going to be talking about their experiences in the programme as well. We'll also hear from Monocle's Thomas Lewis in Toronto. He's giving us the week's biggest headlines from Canada.
What to wash down with a nice tack of mulberries.
Okay, exactly. I wonder if he's more Dumouriez or something else. I think he might have migrated over to Canadian cigarette brand.
Really? Yeah. Dumouriez, it's a very romantic name.
I like Dumouriez.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. Or the Davidoff or something.
Yeah. And I think Dumouriez is Canadian, I think.
Is it?
Perhaps. Or do you have them? Do you have them in the UK?
I don't think we have them. No.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, Josh nodding with authority. That sounds good.
Yeah, exactly.
Rob, what have you been working on today or over the last week?
Well, over the last week, we've been putting the forecast to bed. I don't want to give too many spoilers away, but we have got some. We talked about German foreign policy, weren't we, earlier on this program?
Yeah, we were talking very much. We were in
Stephen
Berlin.
Henry. So we have the classic voice of God German broadcast. We have a feature on why that works. I won't tell you what it's called. Some of our listeners might get
guess. So that's one of three big features in the forecast section. I've also been listening to a tribe called Quest.
Mm.
They're back after 18 years. That record came out today. It's good. It's called Thank You for the Service, We'll Leave You Now, or something similar. It's got Beats, Rhymes and Life kind of vibe to it. It's pretty good stuff.
I like the notion of sort of voice of God, because the other thing, which I didn't realize when Marie-Sophie went to Hamburg to do the story for us, was that it's the most watched newscast in the Western world.
Yeah, yeah. Beats PBS, the BBC, anything, hands down. It's that thing.
Yeah, but you have 10 million people watching you live.
When you say voice of God, do you think we should get the producer to give you a bit of echo?
I would love that.
I'm getting
a shaking of head behind the glass.
Okay, so
we're going to have to leave it there. Marcus Hippie, Josh Vandert, Rob Bound. Gentlemen, have a very, very good weekend. That's all we have time for this edition of Midori House. Today's show is produced by Tom Hall, research by Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and also Daphne Karnizis, our studio manager. Today was Toby Hammond. More music is next, and of course, Midori House is back at the very same time next Monday. But for me, Tyler Verlet, goodbye. Have a good weekend.